I don't think either one of us are gentlemen.
Well, I was trying desperately to categorize you as a gentleman and, you know, by extension, myself.
And as far as the meeting room choice is concerned, I think we sort of agreed that if there's a bigger room, then it's logical for us to move all to the bigger room. And if they're the same size, then we'll alternate. So I think that's a reasonable approach.
Again, thanks to the registry stakeholder group for joining us. I've got the list of topics for discussion. For the transcript, it's Jennifer Standiford, Vice Chair of the Registrar Stakeholder Group. first topic I have listed here is the GNSO Council issues and motions.
Okay, thanks very much, Jennifer. And I think for that one, I'm going to hand it over to Mr. Robinson. Jonathan is over here at the end. So Jonathan will lead us through, at least from the registry side, our discussion about the pending council motions.
I hope it's relatively straightforward, ladies and gentlemen of the registrar's constituency, or stakeholder group. There are two motions, the first being one to deal with to vote on a charter with regard to curative rights protections for, which follows on from the previous PDP on IGO and INGO names. And then the second is to initiate a discussion on the next round of new GTLDs. So we expect to vote for both of those motions, and I mean, be good to hear where you're at, and if we need to discuss any elements of that, it may be quite straightforward depending on where you're at. So perhaps we should just hear from you first and then take it from there.
Where are our GNSO councillors?
I see Mr. Bledel.
Okay. I see Yoav is there. Where's Bledel?
Straight ahead.
Oh, he's down there. Chase, look at this thing with you hiding in the cheap seats today. Is this really confusing?
I'm doing stuff.
James, go ahead.
No, I was going to follow you. Go ahead.
Okay. Mysteriously, on our schedule this session, we had not yet had the opportunity to discuss the motion with the membership at large. So while we do not have a position as a registrar constituency, the positions are quite straightforward as they are following out of previous discussions.
And we are commenting on the motion for IGO.
James, go ahead.
I'm asking you, we're commenting on the motion specifically for IGO, NGO?
James, I mentioned both of the motions.
Both of the motions.
So in essence, you could address both, but the IGO, INGO one on curative protections comes first.
Okay, so yeah, I don't see anything particularly controversial about these. These were scheduled, I think, or they were put up for a vote at their previous meeting, and were deferred to give us additional time to review them. I don't see anything specifically in material with these. I don't know, Volker, if you had any other thoughts. They're just not really moving the needle for us. Yoav?
I'm in the same position. I don't think there's anything there that we should fight for or something like that.
Now, a longer conversation could be had about a different IGO-NGO issue, but would you like to discuss that now?
Well, I think we should. What I'd like to do is knock off the two motions, if that's acceptable to you, get those done, and then clearly the next item on the agenda is item 6, discussion letter from the NGPC regarding IGO-INGO identifiers in new GTLDs.
So I will save my comments for that agenda item. Thanks.
So are we done on the motions then? Great.
Yes, we're assuming to be voting in the affirmative.
Okay, great. So the next item is that item 6, discussion letter from the NGPC regarding protection of IGO-INGO identifiers. This follows from a motion that was approved at the council level and a series of PDP recommendations that were made to the board. The board elected to accept or those components of the motion that were not in contradiction with GAC advice, but to the extent that there was a contradiction with GAC advice, sought to have more time to deal with those, and subsequently, having had various conversations, decided to refer them back to us for potential modification in line with GNSO procedures. So that's where we're at. Personally, I'll lay my cards on the table. It seems to be, in my view, a good faith attempt by the board to navigate something which is challenging, but I understand there may be other feelings on this, so it'd be good to hear where you guys are at. Thanks.
James?
Oh, thank you. And thanks, Jonathan. And so any folks that were there on Saturday know I have pretty strong feelings about this, and I am really doing my best not to sound strident or disruptive, but I think that we really need to take a very close look at what the bigger picture of what's being asked of us. I believe that the board via the GAC via the board has initiated a PDP, and the PDP was reached a successful conclusion with unanimous policy recommendations, not for new GTLDs, for all GTLDs. And this has put the board in a very sticky situation because those recommendations fall short of what the GAC asked them for. So, I mean, I'm thinking I've got my facts correct on this, but I'm looking for Jonathan to correct me if I'm wrong. We're now being asked to reconvene that some form of that PDP, or that PDP working group, or some of those members, and ask them to revisit those recommendations. I think, first of all, I think that this is perhaps inappropriate to ask us to do this. You know, we have the entire community had this opportunity to work on these policies and to make these recommendations. Furthermore, I am at a complete loss of what we tell them. Did they get it wrong? Were they missing some data? Did they not follow a procedure? I mean, where did they go off course? Or were the outcomes just simply not satisfactory to another structure outside of the GNSO? And I think that's the part that I start to get a little nervous about, is that a group, admittedly a high-level advisory committee, can essentially start a PDP and then say, no, we don't like the... we're unsatisfied with the results. We need to go back and do it again. We had a lengthy discussion this weekend about participation and for volunteers not to get discouraged in the process. Well, the folks who were involved in this for 13 months, I believe we owe it to them to explain precisely what they did during that rehearsal PDP and why they're now being asked. Now, it may not be, and to fairness, Jonathan, I'm probably glossing over some important details, one of which is that this is not, I think, immediately directed or envisioned to be a PDP. This would be an advisory or consultation. I'm still not clear at what would happen if that advisory said, no, our original recommendations stand, or something to that effect, and what the outcome would be. I realize this puts the board in a very difficult position. I'm just not too keen on giving them this easy of an out, because I think it sets a very dangerous course. So if I'm alone on this, I'm perfectly happy to take the rocks and the spears for this one, unless, the registrars tell me, shut up, Bladel. Just sit down and go with this. You're making a fight where none is needed here. But I don't see it that way. And I'm I guess really looking for some feedback from this. The joint registry registrar contracted party house is. What are your thoughts on this? Especially my fellow registrar counselors and the XCOM. I'm looking to you for some direction.
Thanks, James.
I see Chuck stands up. I mean, I can give you a little more detail. And I think, James is, together with the councillors, we thrashed this out pretty thoroughly on the weekend. I think there's some other details that we should work with. One is that we have provision, which this letter refers to, in the GNSO operating procedures to modify or amend an approved policy. So they're basically referring to our own GNSO policies to say, look, I'd be the first to acknowledge it's an imperfect process that allows the GAC to come in very late in the day and either reassert early advice or bring in new advice. But I think we all know that's a problematic process. There's another track going on, which is work between the GNSO and the GAC to try and improve the way in which that process takes place. So acknowledging that imperfection, I also think it's worth looking at, regardless of the process or, if you like, political points around this, there's also the substance of what's being asked as well. And to me, in this particular case, the substance isn't that dramatic. And I think we've got some much bigger battles to fight along the way. So those I've swayed into opinion rather than fact, and I promised I'd give fact. I suspect Chuck's probably in a better position to give fact, having done his service on the working group, so I'll stand back for a moment.
Quick response on that is that I agree with you. The material of this is probably, you know, not worth going to war for over, but it, you know, it is not all, it's also not trivial. I think particularly the there's some question on whether notifications forever is, you know, implementable in some respects, but I agree with you. It's a minor add-on to the existing recommendations. As far as using our process to amend or modify PDP recommendations, my understanding is that was when a procedure was not followed, or material data was missing from the PDP, or that some element of the PDP was not, you know, that there was some flaw in that process. And I guess if we're going to invoke that, I would want to know what is the prescriptive advice that we can give that consultative group or reformed PDP, a working group. You know, we can't just say, do it again. We have to say, you got these three things wrong, and why? And I don't know that we have a good answer for that yet.
Sorry, big line. You can stay up. Is it my turn?
Chuck Gomes. First of all, we really don't know what the new GTLD program committee did. I got some information last night from one GAC member that gave me the distinct impression that the program committee may not have been talking with the GAC. They may have been talking with the IGOs. Now, I don't know that for a fact. So I think one of the first things that needs to be done is to talk to the GAC, Jonathan, and maybe as chair of the council, and Thomas Rickert as chair of the working group, and find out whether that, because I got a distinct impression that maybe what the board program committee is asking for in the case of the IGO acronyms only is maybe not a position that the GAC is supporting. We need to know that. So that, I think that's the first step on that one issue. Secondly, let me say to James, and he knows this already, but for everybody else's benefit, I'm one of those that you have to explain why if you reconvene the working group, because I was on the working group. We met every, as you've heard said many times, we met every week for 2 hours for pretty close to a year, I think. I think the right thing to do is to send it back to the working group, and here's why. In the case of the additional Red Cross names, which are the regional Red Cross names, the way that was handled in the working group, and you can confirm this with Thomas, because he and I have talked about this, the Red Cross brought those up late after we had done a lot of work and we were trying to get to closure. And essentially, the decision was made not to get into that and not to include it. In hindsight, if it had been brought up at the very beginning, there's a good possibility they would have been approved. So essentially what we're asking is, okay, let's take a little time and look at that. Let's look at the impacts. Let's see if that's a reasonable request. And then the working group would come back with a recommendation in that regard. And it could be like James said, we may decide no, and that's fine. We just need to give a rationale. so that there's some so that they understand why we made that decision. In the case of the acronyms, the working group was, with the exception of the IGOs and the Red Cross people, less so the IOC people, they wanted protection for acronyms. But we felt like there are acronyms that represent companies and nonprofit organizations and so forth, other than IGOs, that are much more known to the public than some of the IGO names, and it didn't. So why would you protect the IGO acronyms and exclude them for these other organizations? The working group was really strong on that with regard to the IGO full names and acronyms, and so we were clear on that. What the new GTLD program committee is suggesting is, what if we gave them this notice that there is, the claims notice, and we're going to have to get clarity on this. I think that just means the notice after the fact, not the pre-notice that somebody's trying to register your name. That has to be clarified. James is absolutely right. We have to look at the impact of that. What does it mean for registrars, for example, to do this indefinitely? Is there a cost involved? Is it a significant cost? So the working group is the right, it's the format we have to take a look at that. Now, like I said, we really need to clarify, is that a GAC position or is that an IGO position? That's very important information. So, as you can tell, what I'm saying is I think the best thing, once we get the clarification from the GAC, is to send this back to the working group. And Thomas has said he would be willing to continue chairing that. I don't know if everybody in the working group will continue. I will. Some will, some won't probably. But that's the mechanism we have. And the board has a responsibility to get GAC advice. We have to find out whether they really did, or it's IGO advice, and then make a response. And so I reacted the same way as James did when I first saw this thing, same exact way. And looking at it a little more detail, I think that's a reason that if we find out that it was consultation with the GAC and not just an affected party, then I think the right thing to do is to go back to the working group. And in the case of the Red Cross names, I absolutely think that, because it's something that we really didn't do adequate justice to in the working group.
Thanks, Chuck.
Hi, Jordan Buchanan. So those on the registry side of this room in particular probably have heard me give parts of the speech before, but I do think that one of the most critical things that we can do is the policymaking part of our role here at ICANN is to make sure that we have a successful and effective policy development process. We can't complain as a community, you know, when ICANN staff does stuff that we don't like because they haven't gone through the policymaking process, et cetera. It's much harder to have that argument with them when we can't get our acts together and have a strong policy development process. So I think this process, up until the point it got to the board, was great. Like, there was a problem, they asked the GNSO Council to do something about it, there was a PDP, relatively, ICANN scale, rapid results. And then things sort of got waylaid, and we sort of yelled at the board about that. But I think we're left in the position of wondering, like, in this situation that we're in, the GAC, we've submitted a policy, the GAC's has an opportunity to the board has to consult the GAC, as Chuck pointed out earlier, and the GAC has an opinion on this. And if we look at this in the broader context of the multi-stakeholderism discussion going on right now, there has to be some voice for government in that process. And so I don't think it can be our position that we just say, oh, we don't care what governments think about this. And as Jonathan said, like, this is certainly not the right way to do it, and I hope we can reform that. But there has to be some way for the policy development process to take on board that advice that comes from the GAC. And I think this is the only way. And Chuck's talked to the substantive reasons why that's the right way, but I just don't see a way to say that we have a good policy development process if there's no way for the governments to meaningfully participate in it. And so I personally don't see a way other than sort of the path that we're set upon, even though I don't like particularly the way we got here.
Jordan, thanks.
I think maybe move on to the next item.
James, the registrars, we understand you're seeking the guidance of the registrars, and we will be sure to provide you with that feedback.
I'm sorry, I was having a conversation with Jordan.
That's okay. I was just, you had asked a question previously, which was, I am looking for direction from the registrars.
Correct.
I was acknowledging that and saying that we would provide you with the feedback.
Okay. By tomorrow.
You got it.
Okay. Hi, everybody. This is Keith Drazik. Next item on our agenda is just a brief discussion, I think, of ICANN's operational accountability or service delivery to contracted parties, and I would include in that the soon-to-be contracted parties of the new TLD applicants. Let me back up. A couple weeks ago, the Registry Stakeholder Group and NTAG sent a letter to Akram Atala, head of the GDD, copied Fadi and Steve Crocker, outlining a long list of concerns and issues that we'd identified about ICANN's delivery of service to us, including specific recommendations for resolving and addressing the list of concerns that had been raised. That was a result of a pretty comprehensive working group or drafting team that we put together. There was a survey conducted of the members of Registry and NTAG, and the letter was sent. We actually had provided an advanced copy of the letter, so they weren't surprised when it was finalized after the vote, which actually generated a call, not surprisingly, from it was Cyrus that reached out to me and said, hey, we'd love to have a conversation before London to sort of talk through these things. So we had that call a couple weeks ago. I think it was actually fairly constructive. We ended up also having a joint XCOM call, and this may have been, you may have already addressed this, a joint XCOM meeting, with registries, registrars, and NTAG with Akram and his team two nights ago. That, again, I think was very constructive dialogue, and I hope, sort of lays the groundwork for, working better together and establishing, certain expectations and predictability around ICANN's delivery of service to us. I think this is an opportunity I think we ought to seize. They've indicated a willingness to address a lot of the issues. The one thing that we are really calling for is some level of SLAs that, in a sense, we as contracted parties have SLAs. If we violate our SLAs, we could be found in breach of our contracts. That, frankly, ICANN, as a service delivery organization to us, really ought to be held to the same standard, particularly as Fadi talks about, the focus on, hardening ICANN's operations and systems and, sort of trying to mature the organization from an operational perspective. SLAs, to me, are a no-brainer. So we raised that today in our conversation with the board, and it's something that I think you'll continue to see the registries and the NTAG engage on and really push for. So to the extent that we as contracted parties can all work together on that type of messaging and being specific in terms of the things that we would like to see in SLAs, I think that would be really productive. So I would suggest, and we haven't really had a chance to talk about this in any detail, but the idea of a joint contracted party house and NTAG little drafting team or working group to come up with some specific types of metrics and recommendations that we would like to see turned into SLAs on ICANN. So I'll stop there and see if anybody else wants to jump in.
Yeah, thanks, Keith. Sorry. We had discussed this on, prior to this meeting, I think we had a call, didn't we? Yeah, sorry, my brain is a bit fried, so I'm not too sure whether I'm having calls or face-to-face meetings with people at this stage. We spoke about this, and we had an interesting, fairly productive meeting with Akram, Cyrus and co. the other evening. Mr. Zupke was in the room as well. Hi, Mike. one of the things that we have been doing, I think with both XCOMs at this stage, is trying to engage with ICANN senior staff on a kind of more regular and less confrontational way in between public meetings. Because what tends to happen, at least in my personal opinion, is that we leave everything till the public meeting and then it becomes a little bit ugly.
Yeah. Venting?
Venting, lots of venting. There was also a few other things I think were brought up specifically with respect to our community, our behaviour and attitude with respect to ICANN staff, which we need to address. I don't know, do you want to speak to that, Keith? I'll hand this one over to you, because this is more of a...
Sorry, what was the topic again?
Behavior.
Us towards
ICANN staff. You don't recall this. Have you got like kind of collective, whatever the word is over there?
I may.
Okay.
My brain's
selective memory.
Yeah.
Okay, this came up specifically in the context of people being quite abusive to ICANN staff during webinars.
Oh.
And it was just to do with like the community standards and everything else? Yes.
Chat? As it relates to chat.
Well, it's not just in relation to chat. I mean, I actually heard somebody, I don't know who it was, whether it was a contracted party or a non-contracted party, was screaming at ICANN staffers when they were trying to seat people during the opening ceremony, which I thought was a little bit inappropriate.
This is where they propose the code of conduct.
So let me jump in. Yeah, so what Michele was referring to was there was a proposal in the joint XCOM meeting with Akram and his team that on the webinars that are conducted, I think primarily for the NTAG, they got rid of the chat box in Adobe Connect. They basically took it away, and there was no ability for you to submit comments or anything like that through the Adobe chat. As we learned, that was in reaction to apparently a sense at ICANN that a lot of the stuff that was being typed into chat was abusive and disrespectful and inappropriate, unprofessional, whatever word you want to use. I wasn't on those, but I take them at their word that it was at least offensive to them. We got into a little bit of a back and forth, and it turned into a conversation about professionalism and sort of expected standards of behavior. We pointed out actually that now when you log into Adobe on any of the various community calls, there's actually something that you accept to say that you will abide by certain codes of conduct. And that turned into a discussion about the need for the community groups, registries, NTAG, whatever, to sort of self-police, and to if there's somebody who's acting inappropriately or typing something that's not professional or not standard, sort of accepted behavior, that we really sort of call them out and, put a stop to it. And I think that's perfectly reasonable. I think, we're all professionals and we ought to act as such. And I think that, the hope is that we have the tools that we need. I did point out to Christine that, I think maybe what they were sensing was real frustration from the community. This wasn't coming from nowhere, right? And I didn't go so far as to say you need to, sort of thicken your skin a little bit, because I wasn't aware of the actual content, it was hard for me to argue that point. But I do think that we as contracted parties need to make sure that we all, sort of work to make sure that we're keeping things professional. But hopefully they'll bring back the chat feature and we'll be given another opportunity. Matt?
Yeah, just before we go to Matt, don't worry, Matt, I'll let you go in a second. I mean, the kind of thing that we were saying to ICANN around all this was, most of us are in service-based businesses. We understand the concept of customer service. If somebody has an issue with whatever, be that as a registrant or a registrar in relation to a registrar in relation to a registry, you'd expect a certain degree of professionalism and turnaround and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So at the moment, we feel that it's kind of one way. It should be more two ways. But when it comes to the professionalism and everything else, that has to be from both sides very much. So, Matt, go on. You know you want to.
Yes. Thank you, Michele. To the point, Keith, you made earlier about looking for a drafting team for the contracted parties, I'll raise my hand and participate in that. You know, I think we had an interesting exchange with them, ICANN staff, this morning about radar. And they started talking about bringing the system back online. And I asked about, you know, additional security features that were going to be there. And they said, well, you know, we heard that two-factor authentication was too onerous and this and that. And I'm like, well, we're the customers of that portal, and we all have those kinds of security services in place. So I think to the extent that we can team up together and kind of work on some of those SLA items is great. So you can put my name down for that.
Thanks very much, Matt. And, you know, I think, I mean, they said they were receptive to input and that they were really seeking input so they can help measure themselves and make sure that the priorities that we, you know, the what we think are priorities are something that they're responding to. But they did ask for specifics. So thank you for the for volunteering. And to the extent people can start thinking about the types of metrics and the type of things that we would like to have measured related to a possible SLA, it's really critical. And we have a unique opportunity here.
Thanks.
And just actually going on a bit about the radar and other things like that, in the meeting we had this morning with Cyrus Akram and I can't remember his full name.
Ashwin.
Sorry. They're definitely interested in engaging with us and following up on what kind of things we'd like to see. So it's just really a matter of, I suppose, of following through. Jordan.
Yeah, so one thing that I asked for a commitment on and didn't actually get it back, but you guys may want to press this as well, is just to get a formal commitment from ICANN to do whatever you want to call them, postmortems or root cause analysis, whatever, a formal turnaround time to provide the community, you know, provide affected parties at the very least, but probably the community, with some sort of postmortem after any significant operational failure. Because right now, like, stuff happens, and we get very various levels of sort of responsiveness, and sometimes it's an official very short statement, and sometimes it's they come and tell us, sort of explain later on, but having some sort of formal, most big companies that provide online services have some place where when they have big operational outages, they post what happened afterwards.
Just as an FYI, with respect to the radar issue that impacted registrars probably more than registries, we did engage with them on this, and they did provide us with a better kind of explanation than the one that was publicly posted. So we did get more from them. We still don't have, obviously, timelines and when it'll be back up and all that, but
yeah, I mean,
they are listening.
I don't think that anyone can reasonably commit to fix problems in a certain amount of time, but you can commit to respond back and explain what happened in a reasonable amount of time and make an ongoing commitment that you will do that, which is, I think, what I asked for and may resonate with you guys as well.
This is Jennifer. I don't think there's any difference between us seeking those SLAs from the ICANN staff versus us having to provide those today. And all of our contracted party contracts, we have to adhere to timelines. So I think to that point, that's what we're seeking.
Yoav?
Talking about this, I just wanted to take it to another point that we've discussed with the ICANN staff on the GNSO meeting with them, which kind of relates to that. I've asked them the question is, where's Eros? Where did that system disappear?
So during the joint session on Sunday, we did get an update on Eros,
yeah.
I believe from Mr. Gift.
Yeah.
It is there's a dependency there on the new portal in order to launch Eros. That was my understanding. Did anybody else have any further?
We got the question, that answer also. They were saying that this is a whole thing with their integration with Salesforce and so on. But one of the issues that they raised, and this is what I wanted to speak about, we believe that this is very important for the new GTDs program and make it easier now and for onboarding and down the road for managing. For most registrars, actually, to do it in a simpler way. One of the reactions was that there's no much buy-in by the registries. And that's an issue I thought is important to raise in this meeting because it does work in the benefit of all of us. It's a simple system that just helps everyone do these management of contacts and onboarding issues very easily. So, or at least it's supposed to do that. So, do you have anything? Did you discuss this at the RYSG? Is this an issue at all?
I believe it is an issue, and the issue that we have is we're not given a timeline, and that's.
I've actually talked again with Cyrus today, and they're really close. They kind of, in a few weeks, they can put that up or something like that. One of his issues, by the way, that he thought will be for the registries is that they cannot take the registries cannot take the data from that system and have separate systems. So I just raised an idea to, you know, add an API, a simple API for that. So yeah, it's a good idea.
The API thing was discussed with ICANN, well, I don't know, a year and a half, 2 years ago. Benny, you were on those calls as well, I think. Something about an API that came up. No, didn't it? I thought it did.
Never mind. But no, the issue is, what's the position of the registries on this? Was this discussed? Is there any way that we can get more registries on board?
Go over to you, Keith.
I'm going to have to defer on this one because it's not an issue that I've been following super closely. Is there anybody else that can jump in on this one? Anyone? I'm going to tee up the question again. So the question, the issue, so anybody can try to respond.
Okay. Frame the question.
I think basically you are saying is there any interest in the registries to support this once this goes live to make the life of the registrars easier? I think that's frank enough.
Or are the registries opposed to it, and if so, why? I suppose, maybe. I don't know. Something like that. Some clarity would be helpful.
I'll just volunteer that we haven't discussed this. This hasn't been something that's been covered in our group. So, I mean, my suggestion is not to sort of kick it into the long grass or anything, but just that it's put to us ideally in writing, but I'm sure we're capable of remembering it as well, and we discuss it at our next meeting. I'm not aware of this being something on our agenda. Maybe someone can remind me.
Well, there was at least one registry participant, one or two registry participants involved in the AROS working group going back over, I don't know, 2 years or more. And then kind of ICANN had some kind of demos of it it was Buenos Aires. In Buenos Aires. And then it kind of disappeared.
They promised to have it in a month.
And then it disappeared. I don't know. We kind of went off to somewhere strange. Jeff.
Thank you. I'm not sure if I'm speaking as a registrar or registry here, but I think I would say the best path forward here is to ask ICANN to give everyone an update of what this system is going to do, because I know from the registry, I doubt many of the registries, if any, have even seen it or what the functionality is supposed to be. I think it was Roy from Neustar was working as part of the working group on Eros back then. But I think that nobody even knows what it's supposed to do. It's gone through so many different iterations. And I think, as Yoav said, Buenos Aires was, you know, what was that, November? And they said it was going to be up in a month. And it's now almost July 1st. So I would, before asking, you know, if one particular stakeholder group is opposed or against, I think it would be great to see what the system is actually supposed to do, and for us to get another demo of it and maybe some functionality, because I've never even seen it exist.
So that's perfect, because that seems that there's no one against. It actually should be a positive thing for all of us, and we can just, you know, make sure that what you've asked is communicated soon.
I have a feeling nobody knows what it is.
Well,
what
generally, as you know, instead of as much as I understand and what I've seen is that instead of for the registrars to put in their contact details and all the information that we provide separately to each one of the registries, to have one place to do that. And you can also provide the documents for the RRAs and so on in the same place. Now, it's not only now on the onboarding, it's down the road when you need to change contacts and so on. It's just one system to do that. Am I right?
Yes, Suav, you are correct. Thank you. Maxim.
Maxim also invited. Some jurisdictions, they recognize paper documents only. Thus, participation won't be universal.
That's okay, by the way, but still the managing the contacts and all other things in one place would make life easier for most of us. Much easier.
Foremost, because to identify you as a person acting on behalf of a company, you have to provide power of attorney or something which is should be always in paper. And so.
Yeah, but okay, I think so.
That means we'll you just put the documents there for us to download and send it over to you. Some
of the
still make okay, things in a simple trace.
Yoav, we can take this offline. And it's at a high level, it was meant to at what high level it was meant to be for exchanging some of the contact data, like the technical contact, admin contact, marketing contact, legal contact, which isn't an actual contract. It's just a list of contacts. And then there were other aspects of the system that were looking at contracts and various other things where these complications came in. But we'd probably need to get a proper status update from ICANN. I see a gentleman at the microphone. And that would be the gentleman from Newster,
I believe. Mr. Roy?
Yes. So I was involved in the working group. This dates back to almost 3 years. And then I also lost track of the project. Because there was a lot of delays from ICANN, and the last that I had seen anything of it was an online demo more than a year ago now. And I was not in BA, and I was not in Singapore, so I can't speak to what was and what not, was not done then. But I think we're all in agreement that we do need to see a demo, an updated demo, and that's all I had to share. So. Yeah, I was involved in the working group and provided a significant impact and tried to rally the troops more as a supporter and a champion of the project from the registry side. And I made it very clear to ICANN at the time that I could not run it, but I was happy to be a champion of it.
Thanks, Roy. We'll take that as an action item to get a contracted parties webinar set up to review the latest version of it. Mr. Waldron.
Nice to be here. So just to follow up, so I have seen a demo of it late last fall sometime. I don't remember exactly when, but so I know there's a live demo. I think, Michaeli, it is a little bit more capable than what you were describing. I think they do intend to have the ability to execute contracts and enter all of those it's supposed to be an onboarding system that simplifies the ability for registrars to be able to exchange those documents. It is the contact database. And for me, the one key feature of this was that it would be completely optional, that no one would be required to use it. So I think I was going down that path. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. I think we're behind on the schedule. Do you want to move forward with the last couple of topics? Jennifer?
So the next topic we're going to skip down a little bit is around the joint submission of the proposed draft regarding the IANA transition and accountability. The registry and then NTAC group was kind enough to draft up a response. We're seeking the registrar's support for this submission that will be published on Thursday. Any comments, input, feedback? It's been distributed to the list.
Yeah, so just maybe, this is Keith, maybe just some additional context. I think coming into the session, the London meeting, you know, and the fact that, you know, the IANA transition discussion obviously is one track. There's another track on ICANN accountability. And Fadi, to his credit, at the Net Mundial meeting, acknowledged, I think maybe finally, but acknowledged that the two tracks are interrelated and interdependent. That was the language that he used. That, in fact, you, in order to have a successful and trusted IANA transition, in a sense, NTIA disengaging and handing over the keys and the title of the car to ICANN, that there needs to be meaningful, incremental, and independent accountability structures on ICANN. In other words, if NTIA is going to disengage, then what is the replacement backstop? What is the mechanism by which the community ensures that ICANN remains committed to, for example, the affirmation of commitments principles, accountability and transparency, opportunity for the community to lead and not have decisions made in a top-down fashion. So we've been having conversations with a lot of different folks in the community this week already and leading into this week about the idea that ICANN accountability and a sort of a new accountability structure for ICANN really needs to be in place before the IANA transition takes place. The target date for the IANA transition right now, it's not a deadline because it's not a hard and fast date, but the target is September 2015. So we have more than a year for the community to come together and to identify some reasonable ICANN accountability reforms that can be implemented by September 2015 to basically give us, the community, the confidence that ICANN is prepared to stand on its own without having any sort of, you know, backstop. So we've had some conversations, we've circulated some drafts, we've shared discussions with other folks in the GNSO. The IPC appears to be on board, the BC is considering but appears supportive, you know, working with others, the registries are on board for the most part right now. I think we're very close on some language. The idea is for the GNSO community to come together, if we can, you know, make this happen, and make a joint statement at the public forum on Thursday, basically calling for enhanced and reformed accountability structures prior to the finalization of any transition. So, Kelly?
Yeah, and just to add to this, I mean, saying the entire GNSO, what we actually mean, I think, in this context, Keith, and correct me if I'm wrong, it would be, this would be a statement that would be signed off on by each and every stakeholder group and constituency, which, as opposed to a message from the GNSO Council or anything like that. And I've been informed that that's never happened. This would be a first.
So it's, you know, it's unclear at this point whether we'll be able to get everybody. That's the hope. But everybody I've spoken with, I think, generally agrees with these principles, this idea. And it may be a matter of tweaking some language. But I think through several revisions now, we're getting close to some, you know, fairly high-level and principled language that would send a strong signal to Fadi and to the board to say the community is taking ownership of this process. In other words, that we, the community, decide when ICANN is accountable enough, not ICANN the board or ICANN the staff or ICANN's legal advisors. So I think, you know, I said this in the council discussions over the weekend, is that I think we have a really unique opportunity here. We have, I think, one opportunity to get meaningful accountability. And really what we're talking about is making sure that the board is not accountable to the board, or the ICANN is not accountable to some vague description of the world, you know, accountable to the community. It needs to be truly accountable to the community, and there needs to be mechanisms in place to ensure that if the board makes a decision, that we as the community have an opportunity for redress in the event that something goes poorly or really off the rails. And at the end of the day, what we're trying to accomplish is to protect the multi-stakeholder model and ICANN for the next 20 years. To make sure that we're putting mechanisms and structures in place that will protect all of us for a long, long time, because we're not going to have this opportunity again. Once the transition takes place, there's nothing holding ICANN to the accountability obligations that it's already signed up to, let alone something more. So, Ken, I see you at the mic.
You were quick. So what are you asking for? If you're asking for a vote for support and call for the question, because I think you're not going to find anybody in the room don't believe is going to argue with you.
Thanks, Ken. I guess it's important to follow up with specific asks or details. So the registries have had this document going around on the list today. We've received feedback. I've forwarded the latest draft that has the IPC and registry and a few other support to Michaela and Jennifer, and I expect that you're going to circulate it and ask for input. Okay.
We have circulated, and we've received support feedback thus far.
Okay. So thanks, Ken. The ask is please let us know if we can count on the registrar stakeholder group support for this joint, hopefully unanimous joint GNSO statement. And the goal, the plan is for the leaders of the stakeholder groups and constituencies to stand together at the microphone in the public forum and
it's
to have somebody
to
read it.
Interesting, considering there's so many of us. We can all stand on top of Keith.
Falker, please.
I support this initiative. I think the accountability is of utmost importance for the transition. We cannot have an icon that is only accountable to itself and the corporation, ICANN the corporation, not the community. We had a very fruitful discussion with the board today where the board was actually telling us that they were looking at us to tell them where and how the accountability procedures would look at. And I think that would be the next step. And we might want to hint at that in the letter as well, that the community is ramping up to provide those exact accountability measures that we're looking for, and we'll provide suggestions of that effect to, that effect to the board and the rest of the community.
So, I mean, the registries are basically taking the approach that, hey, it's out there. Object if you have objections. Provide language or recommended changes if you have any. And if we don't hear anything, we'll assume support on this one.
I think that's a good estimate.
So thus far, the feedback that we've gotten from the registrar, our stakeholder group, has been in support of submission. Last item on our agenda is privacy proxy services.
Okay, this one, I'll just give you a quick brief view on this one. The Registrar Accreditation Agreement 2013 version includes a specification on, they're all running out the door, bye, on privacy and proxy, which is temporary. It needs to be replaced with a proper accreditation process. So a PDP was kicked off on it. And how do I put this diplomatically?
The PDP was kicked off on it. It's comprised of members representing the registrar and the community. There are some specific questions that we have around it.
Well, it would be great to see registry interaction,
yep,
for one thing. But the other problem we're having is that part of the discussions around this has gone from how do we accredit proxy privacy services into should people be allowed to have proxy or privacy, which we feel is a little bit broader than we'd like.
Beyond the scope.
Beyond the scope, potentially. At the moment, maybe James can give a bit more on this.
So, I know we're getting close to the end of time, so I'll just sum it all up. We want to know where the registries are on this one, I think registrars, because we're into this one. I think we've got a lot of folks participating. Registries, I don't believe there are any registry representatives on this working group.
Officially, there is one, at least one.
Okay.
But that, as far as I'm aware, that person hasn't been active.
So, right now it's real easy to say that this is a registrar-only issue, but it's certainly easy to imagine in a post-accreditation environment where completely unaffiliated entities are privacy proxy services, or they're affiliated with registries, or registrars, or whatever. So I think that we would really welcome some additional input from registries on this working group. If not full-on participation, then at least maybe you know, informally let us know if there are some things that your stakeholder group sees that we need to be steering towards or away from. And definitely, I'm hoping we can count on you to weigh in on the public comment, because let's say the other side's very active and the knives are out. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks a lot, James. And you and I had a conversation about this last week, and you know, I completely understand. And I think we as registries haven't really sort of engaged or discussed this in a whole lot of detail. But you know, frankly, what's good for our customers ought to be good for us. And this is something that we ought to take a closer look at. Can you give me a sense as to what the next steps are, next timeline is?
Well, we're trying to wrap up a few of the remaining outstanding issues. I think we're driving towards an initial report out for public comment towards the end of the year, but I think that we'll see some community feedback opportunities perhaps even sooner.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is that at the moment it's like a kind of a, how do I put this diplomatically? It's like we're fighting a battle. It's a battle over the most ridiculous thing imaginable.
I mean, it's at times been contentious.
It's been more than slightly contentious. It's
gotten personal.
It's gotten very personal. There's the ombudsman has been involved.
I haven't taken opposition.
Yeah. Well, the point is for registries is this could result in a completely new type of contracted party. So maybe the question for you guys is, how do they fit into our GNSO structure? Maybe think on that one. I don't know. I'm just trying to make it interesting for you.
Yep. Thanks, James. Any thoughts, feedback, any other views? Okay, so I think we'll take an action item to discuss this on one of our next calls and actually get back to you with some feedback. Apologize, I don't have more at this point, but we didn't talk about it today in our meeting.
Thanks, Keith. We appreciate that.
And at this juncture, I'd like to say, oh, hello, Jonathan.
Yeah, sorry, I know we're all done, but we do need a volunteer from you, ideally, for the cross-community working group on the IANA transition, the drafting team. Have you discussed that? Do you have a name?
Yes, we have discussed that, and unless the world implodes, Mr. Bladel, I believe, is our lamb. Is that right, James? Okay.
Regarding the IANA transition drafting team.
Yes.
Something to do with policy. You volunteered yourself.
Cross community working group on IANA transition drafting team. You're the one, are you?
Correct.
Wonderful. Welcome.
Okay, perfect. I think we're done here. Thanks to the registries who did stick around. For the registrars who stuck with us throughout the day, you have wonderful stamina, and well done. We are now adjourning this meeting, and please finish recording and all that. And we are then actually adjourning to the bar. Jennifer?
We are. I'd like to just note that it's also the 15th anniversary of the registry stakeholder group, as well as the registrar. So, celebration to you as well, and we're moving to the bar.